Welcome back to episode 210. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Jim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, here we are, headed towards the holiday weekend, Independence Day. I think we're still allowed to celebrate that, right? It's not racist or anything?
No, it is racist.
It is racist, and, okay.
Yeah, they've gotten rid of it.
Oh, okay. So
we're celebrating Juneteenth.
Juneteenth. Yeah. Something happened in people of color history that we can acknowledge in July.
I don't know, but July 4th is, you'd think it's on the chopping block. I mean, I don't know. You sent me that video on the NFL, how it's basically converted to global homo. They were saying
the NFL is gay. Now,
is gay,
does that mean it's bad? Because remember, you talked about that ad council where they shouldn't call things gay.
Yeah.
But I guess, now since gay is good, you can call things gay, right? If you say you're gay, that means you're good. I mean, that's the best thing to be in today. It's the new, under the new dispensation.
Yeah, I couldn't mean, you sent me that and I was just stared at it and sort of incomprehensible.
I don't think they care about what they're.
Yeah, I was wondering, are they talking about the new lineup on the football squad? I mean, it's,
the Raiders have a gay guy.
It's all transvestite front line. Because we should probably describe it, but the way the advertisement comes, it really is sort of disorienting. It just declares that the NFL is, it's a new NFL, and now it's going to be gay.
It's for everybody and everything. Yeah. Everything,
but they really go global homo in the ad. I mean, they keep repeating transvestites and gay pride and stuff. And it's the way that it just struck me as they can't possibly. I mean, we haven't sunk to that level yet where we're going to have a Kaja Full become the NFL. So anyway, the new world.
NFL is gay. It's lesbian. It's lesbian.
Yeah.
It's inclusive of everything. I don't think it's inclusive for people like me though. I don't feel it's like for everything, really, for everybody. So for how about white right wing extremists? Is the NFL for them too? Because if they're for everything,
It is interesting, isn't it? That it's they talk about inclusion, but that always starts out with kind of the unstated premise that except for white males.
Yes.
Everyone is included except for if you're kind of a heterosexually oriented white male.
Which would be the lion's share of those who support, watch and support and patronize the National Football League.
Yeah, that's right. So it's kind of strange, isn't it?
Well, it's like Gillette. Remember Gillette, toxic masculinity? I mean, let's insult our base. Well, that's the whole thing. People think go woke, go broke. Well, no, they don't, because people would still watch the NFL, and that's not the end game with these corporations. The NFL is social engineering, and
Well, though, you can see how deep the oligarchic control is, because if there were competing corporations that promoted sanity and traditional values, the people would flock to them, but there aren't any. The media just presents the global homo, critical race theory kind of corporations. And notice that they all subscribe to it. Mm-hmm. You don't have suddenly IBM stands up and goes, we are a traditional American company. And, they all, 100% of the corporations all change direction at one time, like a school of fish.
It's almost as if it's coordinated. It's like it's.
Yes, that comes to mind.
Well, man, you just can't stop a great idea like homosexuality. I mean, it's
like global homo.
Right?
Yeah, it's really a great idea. I mean, yeah, so it's
obvious, not just homosexuality, it's transgenderism, which is,
Yeah, transgenderism. I mean, that's right. Homosexuality, at least there's a tradition of it. I mean, it's degenerate, of course. I mean, it doesn't produce children, and it's, you would suspect that there would be medical issue.
It's not insane. Yeah.
Well, there'd be that you'd expect that. And I've read an analysis of genes and evolution, and you can't really have any more than 0.5%.
Yeah.
They refuse to participate in procreation. Otherwise, the whole thing goes out of kilter. So the gene would be, wiped out.
Yeah.
So the homosexual gene would be very rare. It is a medical condition, but that's obviously not how it's presented. It's presented as it's a moral question, if you don't see it as such, then it's a representation of bigotry, even though it is, of course, a medical condition. So it's a denial of just reality.
Yeah, and it is a denial of reality, denial of, basically the idea that you can transform into something that you're not, objectively not, then demand other people, indulge or entertain your fantasy, make it law. There was a ruling, or a, not a ruling by the Supreme Court, but it's the Supreme Court this week declined to wade into a dispute over whether schools may bar transgender students from using a bathroom that reflects their gender identity, meaning what they pretend to be, as opposed to what they are. And this permitted a lower court ruling against those prohibitions to stand. So the Supreme Court is saying, yes, for the time being, schools and institutions have to then, indulge the transgender person's fantasy, meaning they can't have separate facilities. This is all done under Title IX of the Civil Rights Act. And it's funny how these laws, they morph, they pass these laws, and then all of a sudden the bureaucracies and the courts interpret them in a way that no way was imagined by those who signed these laws or created, actually passed these laws. This particular case is particularly entertaining and disturbing. At issue in the case was whether a federal anti-discrimination law applied to LGBTQ students. Gloucester County School Board of Virginia argued its policy of requiring transgender students to use unisex bathrooms was permitted under a 50-year-old law that prohibits discrimination at schools that receive federal funding. Now, that law was passed to guarantee educational opportunities. Now they've morphed into this. By not taking the case, Supreme Court without comment let stand a ruling from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit that found that school policy discriminated against Gavin Grimm, a transgender man, meaning as a woman pretending to be a man, who was denied access to the boys' room years ago when, the article says, he was a high school student, she was a high school student. I'm glad that, here we go. I'm glad that my years long fight to have my school see me for who I am is over, who I am. No, it's what you pretend to be. Grimm said in a statement released by the American Civil Liberties Union, and that's what they're fighting these days, which represented him in the case. Trans youth deserve to use the bathroom in peace without being humiliated and stigmatized by their own school boards and elected officials. Really? You have a right to that? You have a right to pretend you're the opposite sex and then complain about being stigmatized or making other people uncomfortable? What about other people who made comfortable by this person? I guess they have no rights. Neither the school district nor the attorneys responded to the request at the time. Associate Justices Clarence Thomas and Semolito said they would have taken the case, though they did not elaborate on their position. The Supreme Court did not rule on the underlying legal questions. Experts say more cases involving transgender rights will arrive at the High Court conservative states pass a bevy of laws restricting these rights. So here, for example, many state legislatures are passing laws, of course, reflecting the will of the people, but it's being shot down by the courts. And this is just patently absurd. It's ridiculous. Apparently, go ahead.
I just wanted to give an example, real world example of exactly this. There was a suit that lost, and I guess it was a group of women who in a sports club. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how far it got legally, what actually the legal process was where it ended up, but it created this incredible quote where this self-identifying woman, who's a man pretending to be a woman, was in the locker room and had some kind of injunction so that she couldn't be banned. And one of the women who had complained had a quote in the paper. She said, "I don't care what his sexual orientation is. I don't want to see a dick in the locker room." I'm not kidding. I mean, sorry for the vulgarism, but I just don't want to see a dick in the locker room. I mean, okay, well, you see, and she has a point, Tim. It doesn't she? I mean, because it's hurtful. I mean, if she doesn't want to see it, and it's something, I mean, why does she have to have psychological, surgery basically to orient herself differently when the man could certainly go to some place and be among other people with appendages? So.
Well, usually having such an organ is an indication that you are indeed a male.
It's a clue.
It's a clue. And so you shouldn't be in the female locker room or bathroom. But then again, I'm retrograde. I'm not sophisticated. I don't understand, the nuanced and complex world of transgenderism. I just think these people are insane or narcissist, and they're troublemakers. But Grimm was a rising sophomore when he changed his first name to Gavin. It would be he again. Look how they write this, and began using male pronouns. So basically, that changes reality right there. It's like abracadabra, right? Officials at Gloucester High School were supportive, but blowback from the parents prompted the school. So this is the people in the school. So the school is supportive. Parents got mad because they're still in reality. Parent prompted the school board to bar Grimm from the boys' bathrooms, directing him instead to unisex bathrooms, three of which were built in response to the controversy. To him, they built three bathrooms for this freak. And the whole legal systems are upside down for this person. Now, obviously, this is being done for a reason. It's this transgender industrial complex that's supported by big money, the Haas Foundation, the Zellerberg Foundation. There's an agenda here, of course. This is why this crazy idea is even being entertained. The fact that this stuff actually had wind its way through the courts, absorbing, expending huge resources. They're building three unisex bathrooms for this person. Tell this person to go take a hike. You're a freak. You're a narcissist. No, sorry. Everyone has to bend over. I mean, literally have to bend over for this person.
Tim, I have seven sisters.
Uh-huh.
True. Seven sisters. And we had two bathrooms.
Uh-huh.
And one was for the parents. So if I didn't get there early, I just had to hold it till I got to school.
Uh-huh.
And seven sisters. And so when I think of three bathrooms just for him, I mean, what is he complaining about, man? I mean, this should just be fine. Why?
Well, why is he demanding? You think I'm being stigmatized? It's unfair.
Yeah.
What do you think was going to happen to you? Do you think you'd be treated normally by people when you're behaving this way?
Well, we've talked about this very thing, and it just seems so clear that this is just part of the breaking apart of the European consciousness. It is part and parcel of what the probably best known origin is Gregor Lukács. He talked about the Hungarian Soviet, where they have degenerate sexual education for the children at first grade on. And I mean, this is very explicit sexual education. I was reading about it this week. And it was anti-family. In other words, so it was like a 1918 precursor to the cultural world we have now. At the second half of the day, I've mentioned many times, was these fairy tales with the idea and it was just right in the letters that the Bolsheviks exchange, saying, this is great. They don't know if they're even a mineral or an animal. They're so disassociated by the fairy tales. So this what we're experiencing now is just a an attempt to manufacture an artificial consciousness that you know will be easy to control and will be, I think, kind of similar to what Huxley describes in Brave New World with transgenderism. I don't think, you know, they have the intellectual stratification in Brave New World, but I think you're going to have sexual dimorphism where, you know, you'll have almost, since they'll be producing these individuals, they won't have heterosexuality. That will literally not exist for these individuals. They will be polysexual, transgender, you know, they can move back and forth, and they'll basically just being some kind of freakish sex slave for the oligarch class will be, I would suspect, their major function.
Yeah, they've installed, you know, very, I guess, sexual revolutionaries or commissars in the various schools. That's why the school is initially supportive of this. And so parents, you know, have to contend with this. But people, you know, just common people have to start really assessing the sanity and legitimacy of public officials, judges, who actually rule this way. And the Supreme Court ruled that last year that the civil rights laws applied to transgendered people. Now, it's nothing in the law, nothing in the language of law that does. They just decided to extend that protection to it. Now, that's just insane. You know, now that, you know, that you have special protection. And I guess when you get that protection, you become a special protected class. So you attain a certain amount of privilege over other people. And now, you know, businesses can't, I guess businesses are put under increased scrutiny if they don't hire you or they fire you and these things. So it's absolutely insane. And again, I don't think the courts are insane. I don't think it's a philosophical intellectual error. I think it's pure malice at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And I don't think that Americans will have a clear-minded response to it without that information. If they engage in this, the legality or the cultural or these moral, these are all just distracting sophist arguments, you know, to confuse people.
Yeah, well, it's legalistic tamlegery, you know, and you're going to lose that.
Yeah, the people should just say, I don't want to even bother talking to you. This is, you know, you are either evil or an agent of evil. Mm-hmm. And to protect my kids, I have to get away from you. And so this is really, and rather than mess around with, trying to engage the argument because it isn't possible. It's just, there's not enough sort of intellectual substance to it to, talk about it.
They talk about attacking democracy, you know, democracy under attack. Well, here you have these states that are, you know, these legislatures that are representing the people passing these laws. Then you have courts and you have executive orders from the White House, you know, and bureaucrats at the Department of Education doing this who don't represent anybody, you know. And so what, you know, so much for democracy, right?
Hypocritical. There's nothing at the federal level that is real any longer. I just don't think that between the media and the lifetime actors and the just absolute just bold face, evil Masonic Zionists. I mean, look at Biden's staff, you know, all the people he put in the different intelligence agencies, right? Mm-hmm. 100% Jewish, you know, you can just expect these guys are going to be gunning to, you know, ratchet down any sort of expectation on the part of the Europeans who live in America. That,
yeah, his Talmud of Troika.
So that level is, not to say that they should just give up on the federal elections, but the focus has to be local.
Well, you saw that thing on Tucker Carlson about people being bussed in and flown in.
I actually did some research, and that's completely real, and it's very clear example. Everyone should understand this, that the federal government agencies that have the cooperation of the federal government are putting into the United States on a mass scale children and adolescents from from Latin America.
Yes.
Okay. Now they're putting them everywhere. Bus drivers who have been shipping them, and I'm not talking. This isn't at Juarez. I mean, they're bringing them into Cincinnati, into mm-hmm. Detroit. They're bringing them all throughout the United States. And I think you can see what the plan here is that these will be workers that will basically the replicant population, the replacement population for the vax who will be passing away here pretty quick. I imagine these kids will get vaccines as well, but in any event, they are creating this artificial third world population. It'll just wreck democracy. It'll put the and what really is the overall purpose of all this? It is to reduce the European to a second class status. When you bring these kids in, they're obviously going to vote as a bloc, mm-hmm. Because of the education they're going to be getting. I mean, this will be the critical race theories, avant-garde. So you can expect 20, 30 years from now, there'll be self-hating whites, self-loathing whites merged with the critical race Antifa brigades, and they will be by far the dominant political force. And I mean, already that group is in fact in control, because let's face it, the Masonic Zionists are in control, but that group has representation against Europeans in America. We're already at a second class citizenship position. And, and so this is just a roadmap to extinction. Right. This is really what we're experiencing. I don't know if you saw the Black Lives Matter rioter, the guy who smashed the car window into the kid's face. He was released. I think it was like a year community service. And his lawyer argued that the defense was it was just a very emotional time.
Oh, okay. So
yeah, it was just a very emotional time. And so, this while those guys who were invited in to, the congressional hallways are rotting in prison, for what? Smoking a cigar in Nancy Pelosi's office. And here's someone, a BLM rioter who actually did smash a window into the face of a child who was in a child seat. I mean, this is a second class citizen structure.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I guess they voted today to have a select subcommittee to investigate the insurrection.
The insurrection, yeah.
It is really something to behold. I mean, they're smuggling people in and dispersing them throughout the country with these, I guess, vans or buses, contractors. And there's no, who are these children's guardians? Where are they, what accommodations do they have? They're being allowed, they're actually also flying them in, and they're not required to have any IDs to fly.
Yeah, this is really, there's
who's
no-
Who's paying for this,
Yeah, there's the only information that's getting out are the bus drivers. There've been a couple of them.
Yeah.
With iPhones, and also just giving testimony that this is going on, and it's everywhere. And then Carlson somehow got a hold of it. I'm not sure what his position was. I didn't see the whole show.
Well, he said this is just way of replacing people, and this is dumb people, and and then at the same time you have Merrick Garland, our attorney general, the Jewish attorney general. And we have a Jewish Secretary of State, Blinken. And then, of course, the head of DHS is Alejandro Mayorkas. He's also Jewish. And they're not doing anything about it. In fact, probably at the same time, Garland's investigating, threatening to go after states that are auditing elections and calling that, election voter suppression. So when you have laws that try to maintain some integrity in the electoral process, that's voter suppression. Of course, if you're Merrick Garland, who owes his position to election fraud, it's kind of a conflict of interest. Don't investigate election fraud. That's that's why I have my job. right now, you know.
You know, the MAGA crowd is still, they're trying for these audits.
Yes.
I just, you know, I wish them well, but I just can't believe that there's a process there that is going to end up with Trump back in office. It just strikes me as being impossible. And even, and whatever they discover, say they find just flat out fraud, which of course they will, if they look clearly enough, they're going to find it. There won't be any legal process by which Biden can be removed. So all this is going to do is just be another step down in terms of self-esteem for, you know, the Europeans in terms of, you know, what they think about their ability to be free and about the democracy that they're in.
Yeah, they still think that there's a rule of law or something.
Some of them do, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is just a way to tell them no. And, you know, this. So really, I just look at this as a psychological operation. I think Bannon and all of the people who are involved in this, these audits know perfectly well it doesn't go anywhere except to just wreck the psychology. You know, we can't repeat the mantra often enough. The response has to be radical localism. This is how you deal with when globalism and federalism are completely controlled by the Masonic Zionists. There is just nothing else to do. You have to try to be as strong as you can locally. This is what you got to do. Start with the sheriff, the mayor, all the down ballot offices have to be defended with your life. You know, this is what we can do to protect ourselves.
The Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez made headlines this week. She dismisses concerns over crime spikes in major cities as hysteria. This is from a gal who told this harrowing story where she was almost killed on January 6th. She's accusing people who are dealing with the explosion in the crime rate of hysteria. That's rich. We are seeing these headlines about percentage increases, Ocasio-Cortez said. Now, during a conversation with New York Rep. Jamal Bauman over Zoom. Now, I want to say that any amount of harm is unacceptable and too much, but I also want to make sure that this hysteria, you know, that doesn't drive hysteria and that we look at these numbers in context so that we can make responsible decisions about what to allocate in that context. Ocasio-Cortez argued early in June that authorities should stop building prisons and instead focus on underlying public health issues, adding it's not acceptable to use jails as garbage bins. Okay, whatever.
But you know, you can see that they really are in this war is peace transition of language where they just gaslight. I mean, you know, it's Lori Lightfoot's talking about the progress Chicago's making while, you know, the place is just on fire. They just will make the statement, no matter what it is, the catastrophe that their policies brought about, they just define it as progress and they define the concern as racism and that's it. So here is welcome to the new world order. So
it was, post-truth society where
we're in a post and it's in a, we're in an era where the propaganda is from the media and the politicians at 100%. This is not a bad thing because it's clear now. I mean, it was real subtle, you know, during the 70s and the 80s and 90s, the propaganda that brought us here. We were without any kind of independent media, we were just sitting ducks. But the independent media is strong enough now. I mean, it certainly is responsible for the anti-vax movement that, you know, I just look at something, you know, the gaslighting that's going on. And I just think this isn't going to, they're not going to win back the skeptical with this, you know, kind of, war is peace, Orwellian language. They may keep a lid on the vaxxed with this approach. Perhaps they're expecting, you know, diminishing intellectual capacity, and so they think that this language they can get it in place now, but it isn't going to affect the unvaxxed, the skeptical. It's there's no way. So. You know, this to me is good. It just creates a clearer bifurcation, a more obvious reason, a clear reason to just separate from the, you know, the legacy media, the propaganda media, the oligarch media, and not pay attention to the fake dialectic. You know, it doesn't really matter if it is Trump or Biden or whoever they throw in there. We have our own problems. Our problems are our neighborhoods. Our problems are our children. Our problems are our sperm count. You know, we have to be radical in our defense of our local world.
Yeah. Journalist Glenn Greenwald slammed a Costa protest on Sunday, claiming she's mocking ordinary people as hysterical who are afraid of violent crime in their neighborhoods while voting last month to ensure $2 billion more in spending on police that protect her. So she's increasing security on Capitol Hill. At the same time, she's lecturing people not to be hysterical about the explosion in the crime rate, of course, which has been a result of the police stand down, the over environment, sort of the aiding and abetting of rioting that the that so many politicians have engaged in or indulged in the past year. New York City's overall crime or overall shooting incidents have increased 53% year to date, and murders have increased just over 13% year to date, according to the latest NYPD crime data covering the week ending June 10th, 20th. Now, it's interesting because New York, I think in their primary, I guess the guy's leading right now is this law and order candidate. So that's interesting that, you know, so we're going to see law and order politics perhaps for a while. You know.
That would be interesting. I mean, what would you do with a law and order mayor that would return, you know, to Chicago or Seattle? I mean, it's basically like a kind of a reconstruction project of Hamburg after World War II. I mean, the fentanyl brigade is living there in their homeless encampments all over the place. There isn't enough money to feed them all. I mean, it's just the without really draconian powers, I just don't know what a law and order mayor could do at this point. I mean, to Seattle, to Portland. I mean, how would you turn it around? What would you do, you know?
Well, yeah, you just have to go in like, well, that's what happens when you have breakdown and, you know, when you have moral anarchy, it creates social disorder. And then you create the environment where people want law and order. So you get authoritarianism.
I have a friend who this isn't the one who lives inside Seattle was leaving, but another friend who lives on an island outside of Seattle, he took his boat in and he, you know, went around the city and he gave me a report on it. And he said that like Pike's Market, which is the most famous kind of Tony commercial area, it's right on the harbor. It's where the people throw fish around, you know, and it's before Starbucks started, you know? And so he said that area is functioning still, but it has its own security force. He said it's just they have like guys on everywhere that they're hired, and these guys are there to maintain order. And he says beyond that, it's just Amazon. Amazon security is really, you can see its presence in the city. It's kind of a corporate takeover of the city. But he said that the police don't do anything. And the most important thing he mentioned was he actually saw, kind of unself-conscious shoplifting. That people just came in, took clothes, and just walked out, and there was, you know, no one said anything about it. He said the police are just not a presence anymore in the city. It's just a question of these, you know, fiefdoms of corporate security guarding their operations if they're financially able to do it.
This week we had the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff testifying Capitol Hill. I guess they were looking into, I guess, critical race theory and wokeism in the military. And General Mark Milley lectured the congressman, saying that it was very important to for the military to look into, white nationalism or white extremism or white supremacy. And he said, military responded with an answer that was, he said, a lot of us have to get much smarter on whatever the theory is. The nation's highest ranking military officer said, but I do think it's important for those of us in uniform to be open-minded and be widely read. He then added, the U.S. Military Academy is a university and is important that we train and we understand. And I want to understand white rage. And I'm white and I want to understand it. So what is it that caused thousands of people to assault the building and try to overturn the Constitution of the United States of America? Is that what happened? They were trying to overturn the, I mean, what is he talking about? This guy's general.
This is just a theater. It's gaslighting.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to make the 1-6 into a violent rebellion, and as a premise for the crackdown on white extremism. So what they're doing is they're just moving white extremism into a all-encompassing, you know, it's sort of like apple pie. It everything that the white male does, which isn't moving toward global homo and, is extremism. You know?
He's making that leap as opposed to the protests on January 6th protesting, you know, the election fraud has somehow been morphed into a white extremist event or some, or white nationalist or white supremacy event, where there's no basis for that claim at all. Of course, no basis to claim that it's an insurrection or that the Constitution is being overturned. It's ridiculous. But he says, I want to maintain an open mind here, and I don't want to analyze it. It's important that we understand, because our soldiers, sailors, and airmen, Marines, and Guardians, they come from the American people. So it's important that the leaders now and in the future understand it. Once in a right wage. The general added, I read Mao Zedong, I've read Karl Marx, I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me a communist. Yeah, but what they're asking is, why are people in the military being subjected to critical race theory, and they're being indoctrinated in it? Whereas if you're reading Mao's theory or Lenin, or you're not being indoctrinated, you're reading it just to understand it. But their programs in the military are, you know, they're indoctrinating members of military personnel and this stuff. So
yeah.
it'd be different if they made Jared Taylor's white identity required reading, so they could understand the arguments. They're not doing that, so it's not a fair comparison. And also, when he compares white Americans to Mao and Lenin, what is he saying? Where are the enemy?
My question is, I think that there will be, you know, the academies, the Air Force, West Point. I mean, my understanding is they're pretty much Masonic Zionist cesspools.
Mm-hmm.
The brass and the instructors are, you know, right out of that guild, and they handpick a lot of the lodge systems, B'nai B'rith, you know, they get these individuals in there to make them into the next generation of leaders. So, okay, that clique, I think, can look at or listen to, you know, the lectures on critical race theory with a straight face. I mean, they would know it's ludicrous, but I mean, they probably wouldn't laugh out loud. But I just can't imagine, honestly, a clear-minded sort of individual with a European background thinking anything other than this is the military has gone completely insane.
Mm-hmm.
If they actually had someone instruct them in critical race theory. Now, you know, on the other hand, look at how intimidating universities are. I mean, how often, you know, do people actually stand up against professors who give critical race theory or, you know, fractions of that philosophy as positions of fact? So intimidation does work, keeps people quiet, but I don't know. I mean, perhaps they can get a fraction of them, you know, to believe it's real. But I just think in general, no, I don't think they're going to, people who are clear-minded and skeptical aren't going to, you know, they're not going to be budged by that. So it's just, it really is. It's a strange thing. It seems to me that in a lot of ways, it's theater for no other purpose than theater, because they're making these statements, even though they know no one believes them.
Yeah.
Right. Or they're already in the camp of, you know, they believe this kind of stuff, but what do they think the people who like will refuse the vaccines are going to think about critical race theory?
Yeah. Cadets at the Naval Academy in Annapolis reading Robin DiAngelo's, White Fragility. What does that have to do with, you know?
I mean, it's such a crackpot and just, you know, insane intellectual position. I mean, what what is going on here? Why would they even bother with this kind of thing? It's symbolic, you know, of this, of the new second class stature, because, you know, this is replacing the sort of the history, the European history that was, you know, given to people with European backgrounds, that would bring out the idea of, and the self-image of, well, we are a important and a meaningful people. We have power and stature, yeah, and history that's great, and we are proud of ourselves. Well, that's being replaced, by critical race theory, and so perhaps over time they'll just be able to erode the groups down, you know, their minds down to where they actually buy into it. Hopefully not, but again. What can we do? We need to expose it. You know, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is that if we don't identify the purpose of it, if we just try to sit there and go, well, you know, this is really kind of a weak argument, you know, and let's, you know, this isn't going to get anywhere. You have to identify it as evil, as an attack, and declare it as such, you know, and just say, look, this isn't an intellectual position. This isn't analysis. This is propaganda for the purpose of genocide.
Well, yeah, and it's how you dispossess a majority. You psychologically decapitate them. That's what they're doing when they're with these programs in the military. The institutions are being subverted. In education, they're targeting the children. So it's a cultural revolution that's being waged, and the institutions now, you know, we thought were American, are now waging it, you know, from the top down, you know, whether it's the schools or, you know, the president of the United States, you know.
Yeah, well, 4 years ago, you know, we started having our show, we mentioned that this was the nature of reality. You know, we talked about it often, that you couldn't really believe that the government and the media were what they claimed to be, that there was a secret society, mm-hmm, and it had evil intent. And now it's, I think, as clear as a bell. And I think that, you know, the subjects that we've been discussing are all kind of leading toward, you know, hopefully the ability to organize and fight back. I mean, I'm a scratchy record, Tim. I just think that's, you know, we need to clarify what we're experiencing. We have to make sure that people aren't confused by it, are not necessarily frightened of it. I mean, it's terrifying in some ways, but in others, you know, it's a call to battle, not to fear. You know,
what they're doing here is when you have General Milley, you know, calling white rage and white extremism as if this is a problem, meaning, yeah, what is this white rage? Is some white Americans aren't happy or content with the current political, economic, or cultural situation? Why is that rage? It's a natural response. You know, anger at something is often appropriate, or just displeasure with something. And then you voice your opinion because, doesn't your opinion matter? Can you advocate policies that reflect your opinion, how you think things should be? But they've created this fake reality where the country is under siege by white extremists, white supremacists, white terrorists, when there's nothing there. There's absolutely nothing there. It's like calling, like when they turn January 6th into an insurrection. What are you talking about? There's no reality to this thing. And so this is why the president of the United States, Biden, which is fitting because he has no grasp of reality because, you know, he's suffers from dementia. So he's a perfect character to do something like this. But he released a national strategy for countering domestic terrorism memorandum last week. It called for expanding national security state to suppress white extremism. What is there? Basically, he's targeting white America at the same time that there's an explosion, you know, in black crime. You have, again, this weaponized migration that we talked about, where there's more or less the federal government is involved in a human smuggling operation to swamp the country with third worlders. But this thing in the name of fighting white extremism, white terrorism, it calls for, you know, more tech censorship, job discrimination against white people because for extremist views, meaning politically incorrect views they happen to disagree with. It doesn't do anything to make America safer, of course. but it does target white Americans. It says the memo says the most persistent and lethal threat to America, racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, principally those who promote the superiority of the white race. Now, who is that? I've never heard anyone advocates. I hear people self-identify as whites and advocate white interests and even speak of separatism and these things. But that's not white. That's not superiority per se. But that's, it's a point of view. And then they invoke violent militia extremists. Well, where are these guys? Show me one that isn't FBI, And then it blames incidents on white extremism, like attack on Asians. Well, that's all blacks doing that, black people. Then it actually refers to the Tulsa race riot of 100 years ago as if that's relevant to any security threat today. I mean, what?
That's gaslighting, there was this a French TV show that someone sent me the video clip, and they were interviewing
the general.
Yeah, the general.
Yeah,
and it got to the idea of the media was biased, and the presenter asked the general point blank, "Well, who owns the media? Who runs it?"
Yeah,
and the general started to tell him who did it. And I mean, it was hilarious because there was about five other producers who suddenly came out of nowhere to make sure that the general wasn't able to tell anyone who owns the media. But it was funny because in doing so, it just underlined the fact that everyone knows it's owned by the
Yes.
Suit.
He said, who?
Right.
You know who?
Yeah. He goes, well, I mean, come on. But
it didn't help that his interlocutor looked like Leon Trotsky.
Right. But it was just this hilarious kind of where the reality is transparent, and the reaction to kind of keep it hidden makes it all the more vivid.
He was trying to get him to say it, because if you say it, you can be prosecuted in France.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why he was kind of the general was thinking clearly about it, but he was going there. He was trying to figure a way to say it in a way that wouldn't get him arrested. But the response was so hysterical that it just, I mean, it's like, it was like a shining, flashing billboard, Jews own the media, mm-hmm. It was just completely transparent. This is why, the general talks about, the white, and that there's this white racial hatred. It's interesting in that there certainly is racial hatred, and it's very powerful inside, the federal government, inside mm-hmm. the media, but it isn't European. Europeans, we don't have enough power to manage.
It's instituted in policy.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you talking about?
It's like when they talk about systemic racism, I go, yeah. There's been systemic racism for hundreds of years. It's very systemic and it's very racist. And it doesn't come from the Europeans. It comes from these secret societies, which are, Masonic Zionists who want to genocide the Europeans and then just have these clever ways to be able to camouflage what they're doing. And now they've got, to me, when you hear these statements, I mean, these are just distractions. I mean, they're just trying to keep the meme believable, or at least in operation. But I mean, I don't know. Perhaps the selection that I get to interact with and in communication. I mean, everyone knows it's sort of like the presenters with the general in France. I mean, you don't have to tell anyone. Everyone knows.
Was it last month the U.S. government cut off press TV in the United States?
Yeah.
So we're supposed to be a free country, and they say, well, it's controlled by a foreign government, too much influence of foreign government. We can't have that foreign influence in our media. Says, well, how about Israeli influence in U.S. media?
Right. There isn't that? Anything other than Israeli media.
I mean, it's
So it's just, it's a racial dictatorship, and it's one that has at its core just this commitment to genocide, and it's
this notion that they have to shut down extremist propaganda because the people can't be relied upon the public to actually listen to the arguments, so they had to shut it down. I mean, to me, that's pretty transparent what you're trying to do there. But in Biden's report, it says that one of the top priority in stifling extremist recruitment, because this is a serious problem, is to curtail the distribution of hate propaganda. So how do you do that, without violating free speech, or the government is now going to start to suppress the dissemination of information and speech? Because
I'm all in favor of like suppressing hate propaganda, but I mean, it all comes from the government.
which hate propaganda?
Their whole presentation of the 1/6 rebellion is hate propaganda.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hate speech. And it's
what is critical race there than an attack on an entire racial group?
And we would love to enter into if they're serious, okay, let's put it on the table and let's have a discussion. And look, if the legacy media actually brought in real members from the independent media for discussions about these things, the country would be in a state of rebellion in about 2 weeks. So they can't. They just have to keep gaslighting and hoping for the best.
It's like when they mandate like Holocaust education. So you want people to be educated in Holocaust. Are you going to like invite like a genuine debate on the topic? Oh, no. So it's not it's indoctrination, because you don't want people actually disagreeing with you, having discussion about it. It's indoctrination, but it says the intelligence community assesses domestic violent extremists. They exploit a variety of popular social media platforms, smaller websites with targeted audiences, and encrypted chat applications to recruit new adherents, plan and rally support for in-person actions, and disseminate materials that contribute to radicalization and mobilization to violence. Well, that's prove that.
Yeah, prove the violence part.
All they're describing there is people getting together, exchanging information, ideas, and communicating. You're putting it, you put hate on it, that gives you the pretext to try to suppress it. Yeah. Why don't they apply this? Why don't they apply this scrutiny to like Antifa or Black Lives Matter and their interstate terrorist network?
So this is the thing. They cannot possibly enter into debate. They have to just keep the propaganda in motion. And I think that they will keep control over the vaxxed pretty well, particularly as their mental facilities start to weaken. But in terms of the unvaxxed, the clear-minded, this every time they do this stuff, every statement by a general, someone pretending to be an American general who's just there as a theatrical person to try to ratchet down the pride and sanity of Europeans, it doesn't work. I mean, they really think they're going to regain the people that are interested in independent media with this kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. It's just impossible. They don't have an argument out there that's going to have a slight bit of difference for these people. And they actually are creating more people. Honest to God, they think that this is control, is making their fraction of the population they control larger. It's not a chance. It's just too stupid. This is making more and more people.
Well, that's
skeptical.
What happened. I mean, look what critical race theory did. It woke a lot of people up to this. Now you have a lot they're the one fanning the flames, and it's going to forge white identity.
It will, of course, In fact, that's, and I think that's why they're kind of anticipating it, and to give a justification for the violence against whites that will be forthcoming. I think they would like to have Antifa, handle this, but I don't think that's very likely. So, I don't know how they're going, the vaccine, I think, was the idea that they had to get rid of us. But, the final, 40% of the population isn't going to take any of this stuff. And all they're doing is just going to wipe out their base. There won't be, so it's just, I mean, there's really nowhere to turn in terms of the natural functions of democracy. Their policies are all just they're dead ending. But I think that they, you know, anticipate just complete dictatorial control. You know, they've got the surveillance state. You know, they have, I mean, Biden's quote about you can't attack the government unless you have nuclear bombs and F-15s. But see, this really isn't true. There are other ways to attack individuals in the government without, if you don't own an F-15. One hopes it doesn't get to these points, but, you know, as they, you know, become clearer and clearer in their genocide, it's going to be more and more morally visible, more and more morally, you know, correct to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they also the crazy situation where, like, you can't, like, if you're an employee for the government, you can't hold views, you know, conservative views, because that makes you their definition of extremist is rather broad, because it comes as about half the country.
Yeah, do you think the education classes, like, I've seen some of the education curriculum of, I mean, this is like beyond anything that, you know, North Korea or the Soviet Union ever cranked out. They have these bizarre re-education curriculum, you know, for government employees, you know, with global homo, critical race theory. You know, they just have these really, you know, and also just direct hatred of the white race. Well, of course, critical race theory, but I just wonder, you know, I mean, you can imagine like a mentally ill white person going in, someone who's already kind of leaning toward Antifa and not, you know, and believing that it's a legitimate curriculum and it makes sense. And you know, but do you really think that someone who is, you know, someone who wouldn't take the vax, someone who's skeptical, would actually sit through one of those classes and have his mind changed? I mean, do you think it has any lasting impact on clear-minded people?
No, I think that they're just, if anything, they're just would want to keep their heads low. And, you know, it's a job. I'll muddle through it. I'll endure it and go back to the office. But it's becoming increasingly more difficult to do that because, as the revolution continues apace, the demands become more and more absurd and extreme. You know, pretty soon you have to offer up your firstborn child, you know, to some, you know.
Yeah.
Sex cult or something to prove your allegiance to the new order, and that's what they're edging towards. I mean, that's at a rapidly increasing pace. And these things kind of, it's almost like a ship sinking. It, you know, as a ship nears its end, it goes down a lot faster. And so
that's kind of where we're at. That the ship of the kind of middle class consciousness and that is. Ending quickly.
Well, they don't appear to. You know, used to be that, you know, they'd have to worry about public opinion and come across as being somewhat normal, and they don't seem like the NFL. They don't seem to care at all about how it looks at this point. Now it's almost like they think they've won, and now it's just, you know, they're just mopping up, and that's not, you know, they can get rid of anything.
They're actually just going to end all of these things. I mean, if they're looking to like a Georgia Guidestone situation. 20 years, and there isn't an NFL, and there isn't, you know, even like grocery stores and things. It's all just, you know, kind of their new world order universe, you know, with 400 million. I mean, this, you know, it's sad to say that when you see the NFL's position, it isn't going to, you know, attract a lot of fans to the games, you know, and it seems just like it's self-destructive.
Yeah, meaning the NFL isn't interested in the NFL anymore.
Right. Yeah, it's not. Well, certainly not as a commercial entity.
No.
Because that position is bizarre. It's not even, you know, welcoming to. I mean, it's just I just think it's going to lose lots and lots of fans, and so and they knew that when they put it out. So this means to me that, you know, they don't think that the business aspect of the NFL is even something they're looking, you know, forward to maintaining in the future.
Yeah. And as far as like the war on domestic terrorism is one thing that we've found out in the past few months. One thing is the January 6th incident, of course, evidence suggests that there were FBI, you know, assets or informants stirring things up, creating the conditions there. You have a lot of unindicted co-conspirators now, which are raising questions, were these the assets? They, you know, was the FBI involved, actually involved as agent provocateurs? That's not really too surprising if you think about it, because they have a history of this. And that, you know, last year you had that whole the caper to kidnap the governor of Michigan. It turns out that was an FBI sting operation. The whole thing was run by the FBI, and the agent who ran that in Michigan was rewarded, and he's now at the Washington office leading the investigation, in quotes, into the January 6th incident. And so I think five of the 19 conspirators to kidnap Gretchen Whitmore were FBI, you know, assets. And that was originally a plan to storm the Capitol, and it morphed into a kidnapping caper. But it was the FBI the whole time. And, you know, of course, Merrick Garland himself, he way back in the 90s, he covered up the Oklahoma City bombing. To maintain the official narrative of Timmy the McVeigh, the lone bomber. So we have Merrick Garland, who was actually involved in covering up the real story of Oklahoma City, because that was also, at least the evidence suggests, that was FBI and their Patriot conspiracy, PatCon, and they had infiltrated Elohim City. You had the incident in New York, 1993, the bombing of the World Trade Center, another FBI sting operation gone bad. So everywhere you look, you see FBI. Now, I don't get into like Al-Qaeda and its origins and its controllers in the CIA, created by the CIA and the Pakistani CIA, and how those terrorist organizations are assets of Western intelligence, same with ISIS. So whenever the government's going after terrorism, you realize the terrorists are always assets of the government, you know.
Yeah, so, Jim, we're living in a bad movie.
Yeah. So when something does happen here, you know, you're going to find out, oh, look, a bomb plot or an incident, a shooting. Turns out the person or persons involved in it, or several persons involved in it, will be FBI, you know, informants, and it'll be an FBI operation, you know. And but the stuff that this can happen the way it does, like 93 bombing, where it can be reported on CBS News, you know, that the FBI actually delivered the bomb that blew up the parking lot in the World Trade Center. And it was supposed to, you know, they're actually, and there was a report like it was a mistake or something. But the bottom line is the FBI, there was never any accountability for it, you know.
Yeah, my favorite one was the shoe bomber being brought to the counter by the military. I mean, it's just, you know, so these things have been exposed as government operations. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to just, you know, endlessly do it over and over again. We can just now sit back and recognize it for what it is. It's just a bad movie, which is designed for propaganda. Mm-hmm. And we can stop interacting with it. I think it's, I mean, honestly, I'm getting now more and more used to just not even knowing, you know, what is the latest sensation, you know, that the mainstream media is like trying to, you know, hoist. I really just use the independent media. I'm finding that it's got, and it updates pretty quickly. You know, if you know which sites to go to, it'll have something on current events, almost, you know, events that occurred recently, and the take it has is far more clear-minded and you get a better sense of things. You don't have to go through the propaganda to get to what could be the reality of it.
Well, you have a situation. Here's the political reality of the situation: is you have, pretty much decades of anti-white agitation, propaganda. You know, these things, sort of critical race theory, being taught more gradually. It's that's basically been the narrative we've been given. You know, white men, whites bad, colored people good, victims, whites, you know, oppressor. That's you know, the narrative we've been given. But in the past 18 months, there's been some acceleration of this anti-white agitation. Yes, almost it's gone to the point of insanity with the George Fentanyl Floyd incident. You know, of course, that sham trial, and, you know, that the fact that that's even allowed to proceed and despite we all know what absurdity it is, and you have the summer of the riots, the mostly peaceful protests that did $2 billion worth of damage, the explosion in crime, black crime, violent crime, the disproportionate role of black males in crime and these things. Then we're taught that white people are the problem, and it's white extremism. Then you have all the agitation of, you know, the whole sort of the humiliation ritual and the struggle session, anti-white struggle sessions that we were forced to endure or witness last year.
Taking that, the knee.
Yeah, and taking the knee and these things. The Juneteenth thing, you know, black everywhere. All academic standards, testing standards, cultural standards being lowered to accommodate blacks and these things. So, and then all the, you know, then of course there's going to be a reaction, and it's going to manifest itself in sometimes anger, call it rage, whatever, put an irrational, you know, sort of an irrational thing on it. You can pathologize it, I guess, call it, you know, but you, and people are going to start to organize, and in the flames of the black of anti-white riots, there's going to be a forged to white identity because people are going to react, especially with critical race theory. I mean, there are Asian parents who are learning that they're white because of critical race theory. But I'm thinking is you're going to have people identifying, saying, hey, you know, stop picking us for being white. And then they might form a collective or some sort of internet community, or even, God forbid, an actual organization or political party. Then when they do that, here's a Biden administration declaring war on anti-white extremism. They'll just label that extremism. And it's, voila, you have a way to suppress any political opposition to your crazy agenda, which is to destroy the remaining heritage America, European Americans. So it's a trap. So it's like a double bind. So, you know, look at whites. So anytime whites identified, organized to defend their interest or react to some crazy Bolshevik attack, they're accused of being the white extremists and terrorists. When they're the victims of it, and when their country is being torn apart, being thrown topsy turvy, you know, when the U.S. government is actively involved in importing non-whites into the country to change the demographics and the culture, the white people, the host society, is to blame. It's their country.
And then bear in mind that if you are, you know, like a black in a city like say Seattle. Mm-hmm. How does this affect you in your commerce, the what the government has done to drive out the white middle class businesses?
Yeah.
And then replace this population with individuals from Latin America.
Yeah.
This is there are some, you know, because of the the Floyd George and the BLM propaganda that may think that this is sort of dawning in America for, you know, like African Americans. This is, you know, they may actually think this is going someplace good for us. But look at those facts. And I think that you'll see that you're on the way to the gulag, and you're not even going to have segregated seating because we're all going to put into a big
clump. Well, in one year, black people kill each other. More black people kill black Americans in one single year in the United States than all the lynchings between 1850 and 1965 in one year.
Yeah, and that is completely from an artificial culture. I mean, mm-hmm.
And by the way, right. So, I mean, and the third of lynchings occurred with whites. So it was a form of vigilante justice. So what's the problem here? Is the problem racism in Chicago? Like Loy Leifer claims that, what's the problem here? You know.
Yeah, and I often talk about how I would hope that kind of clear-minded black intellectuals will bond and form political alliances with the remnants of the European culture in America, because we're natural allies. We are natural allies because we are both being genocided, for one thing. And because both of our cultures were attacked by the same group, and because we have been forced into this position like gladiators to fight each other,
mm-hmm.
right? And sad to say, but the inner city black culture, I've been looking at a lot of videos and talking to people, is really descending into just the most violent and uncivilized mm-hmm. structure imaginable. You know, Lori Lightfoot is just leading him as an example, just leading him off a cliff. All these Soros-funded mayors are all
she's a symbol of progress.
Yeah, they're all permitting the violence to become worse and worse, and they are. And of course, who's addressing the fentanyl epidemic? which incidentally, of course, is really affecting young Black males worse than any other demographic.
Yeah, I think that's the true plague that came out of Wuhan, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's your Wuhan. But anyway, my point is that one of the things that I would really hope could happen is that if you get Black intellectuals who are saying, you know, we've really got to reach out and create these bonds with like groups that have been traditionally, ensconced from our interests, like Catholic groups, you know, the Elks, and different whatever is left of the European organizations. We need to reach out to those things because the image is really destructive to propaganda. And I'm sorry to be long-winded, but this is my point, is that if you have Black intellectuals particularly who come forward and go, you know, we're being destroyed, deliberately destroyed. Here's our track record. You know, look from the Great Society to today, the government is trying to destroy us. And we believe it's also trying to destroy European interests. And that combination and that statement would cut across a lot of the propaganda. They wouldn't, the mainstream media wouldn't know how to address it. They wouldn't know how to respond to it. They would I think, make really stupid mistakes. And if we could get into whatever's left of the leadership in these areas, because some, you know, it's sad to say, but some of these places are really discombobulated culturally. But if it was possible, you could start to form alliances that would actually have the capacity to help self-defense.
Well, I think they've been indoctrinated or steered into being so bitter and hateful towards whites, that's a tall order. Jesse Peterson, who's this Black conservative, was talking. It shocked him because he was showing videos of crimes against whites perpetrated by Blacks, and even the normal reaction on Blacks, the usual reaction by the Blacks watching would say, "What do I care? They deserve it."
Yeah. I would bet it's less than 10% this is just guessing, but I would guess it's less than 10% of the Black population that is really able to be reached by these kinds of clear-minded.
And so that's the problem.
But it's probably only, maybe 40% of the whites. So it's not like so what is left of ethnic pride that is not Zionist and clear-mindedness that is not succumbing to propaganda, whatever is left, I think also Asians. I mean, Asians are as a group they're prone to self-defense, mm-hmm. So at least here in California, they're kind of famous for it, that everyone knows that they're armed.
And they don't have yellow guilt.
They don't have guilt. They operate in self-defense. Yeah. I'm kind of grasping at straws to some extent because I don't have an organizational chart and I don't have individuals to plug in and things are very few. But this is a vision that I have that's positive, that we can move forward toward. And I think that there's going to be a lot more people energized in the unvaxxed side as they see how clear-cut the genocide is. Because, Tim, I'm telling you, the genocide is in operation. And they can hide it. They can, blame white supremacists and, insurrection things. But believe me, the genocide is in operation, and they'll try to hide it. I mean, look at what they're doing with the VAERS data, how they can, mm-hmm. I'm sure they're going to, when you start dropping like flies come, this flu season, they're going to blame the Delta, variant and the fact that these people run vaxxed and they're the ones who are spreading. And then they're going to have some sophistry to try to, make their position coherent to the public. But, all I can say is I don't think it's going to fool anybody, and the gloves will come off. It's hard to say when exactly. It's the the struggle will begin. But man, it's not going to be 5 years. We're looking at very interesting times over the next couple of years, because it will be just a question of self-defense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, okay, Joe.
Well, I mean, I'd hate to end on a kind of pessimistic note, but this is just the world we live in. And, you know, what, so, you know, happy 4th of July for the Kellys. I hope you guys have a great weekend.
Yeah. Independence Day. Happy Independence Day.
Yeah. Here, things are great. You know, we are this respite from all of the lockdown attributes, and people are in good mood, and I think they'll be,
Well, that's one of the things the kind of the terror of the lockdown has ended. You know, there's very few people are now wearing masks, maybe because, you know, they think they're vaccinated. Whether or not, I suspect, like me, a lot of people just aren't, just forgetting about it. So it'd be interesting to see how they try to, you know, revive some sort of fear in the fall.
I'm trying to use, just in a local level, trying to get as much awareness of creating some more fierce resistance against the lockdown that'll mm-hmm. be coming. Got to have a lot of people trained in how to analyze the numbers and stuff so that the public doesn't, you know, succumb to it. We need to have the independent media has to be really very quick, you know, to deal with the sophistry that we're going to be experiencing come November, December.
Yep. So, okay, Joe, enjoy the weekend.
All right, brother. Talk to you soon. Yeah, you too. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.